shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to the latest edition of Shooting from the Lip with John Gaunt and Sputnik International. I've got a great guest for you today. He's not a politician. He's never been elected, or I don't think he has. But this man is known as the Wolfman. What he doesn't know about Fleet Street isn't worth knowing. He's held so many positions, it's unbelievable, including deputy editor of The Sun and deputy editor of The News of the Screws or The News of the World. He knows about newspapers and he knows about the press. And I'm delighted to say the Wolfman, as he's known.
Shooting from the lip.
Of course. Mr. Neil Wallace joins us now. Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon, Gunty.
Good to have you here, Neil. As I say, you were born and bred newspaper man and a tabloid newspaper man at that. Let's start then by talking about one of the biggest tabloid stories of the last few years, the Cliff Richard case. What do you make of it?
It's a classic example of how a perfectly legitimate story has become a cause célèbre because of how badly it was handled by the organisation that uncovered it. The Cliff Richard story, at a time of enormous and justified interest in historical child abuse claims, was a perfectly legitimate story, perfectly legitimate thing for police to investigate, and perfectly proper that the public should be made aware what the state, as in police, were doing. Where it went wrong was the sheer astonishing incompetence of the BBC in handling it. They handled it without any sensitivity whatsoever. They went completely over the top. They got totally overexcited. They fell for this obsession with exposing and making allegations against major names. And I'm afraid that we're in severe danger yet again of a very serious issue of press freedom, almost coming about because the people who are handling it were so bad at doing it. It's a calamitous.
Okay, let's talk about that in a moment. Let's talk about this. So what you're objecting to is the helicopter, the fact that South Yorkshire police tipped them off in that way.
And No, John, that's not quite right.
Okay.
I object not to the police tipping them off, as you put it, because their police were in a bit of a cleft stick here. However, the truth of the matter is, if the police had refused point blank to cooperate, then I don't believe that the BBC would have been able to run it because they simply didn't have enough facts. However, what the BBC, having South Yorkshire, having made the mistake of getting into bed with the BBC, then the BBC ran around like the most juvenile of reporters and handled it appallingly.
What would you say to a cynic who might say, hold on, he's just a tabloid hack, he's just upset because they didn't get the scoop and the BBC did? I mean, you know the Red Tops have trashed people in the past and pretty
of
famous
course.
Names at it. Was this a overreaction by the BBC because of the Jimmy Savile thing? Is there any element to that? And is there any element of you just defending your own patch here?
No, as I hopefully said at the beginning, I think it was a perfectly justified story because it has to be of significance when somebody in this country gets raided by the powers that be, by the state, by the arm of the state that is the police, people with tremendous power. You've got to remember, John, there's an element of... I suffered from this. Remember, I got arrested under the News of the World hacking trial. I was named. I was in all of the newspapers. I don't actually, on principle, think that was wrong, although it caused tremendous grief for me and tremendous damage. But when the police do things, almost always the public have to be entitled to know, because if they don't, then people can disappear in the night. That's where that can lead. The problem was the BBC were not skilled at this sort of thing. They totally overreacted. They totally got overexcited, frankly, where in many ways, it was probably the best place for the story to come out.
OK, I want to go on to the effect it's going to have on the so-called free press in a moment, but just before we go there, you obviously think, therefore, Cliff deserves some kind of compensation, and I take it that you do not believe people should have anonymity when they're accused of such heinous crimes.
I don't really know. I really don't. I think that, I don't think there should be anonymity, because I don't believe in anonymity where the state is concerned. I fear for almost any level where the state has the ability to do things without you and I knowing about it. I don't trust the state enough. And I speak that as someone who's been on the sharp end of what the state can do. When I got arrested, right, they detained me for 2 extra hours in the police station after questioning me to assemble enough press outside so that when I walked out into the classic press bombardment that I've been part of many times. And they simply kept me waiting in a cell until they tipped off enough people. Now, the reason they did it was because they were trying to put pressure on me. And, you know, you have to wonder whether this came into their thinking in South Yorkshire.
OK, so when we talk about Cliff and what's happened and the fallout, is there a danger now then that other people are going to get away with things? Of course, Cliff is wholly innocent, but other people might get away with things, and that by the back door we might get the kind of things that Leveson was talking about and the kind of free press is going to be curtailed. What's your opinion?
There's two elements to this, John. One, I don't believe, except under the rarest possible circumstances, the police should be allowed to arrest anybody without that becoming a matter of public knowledge. On the flip side, if you look at it from the police point of view, and if you've ever been a crime reporter, for instance, the public naming of someone who's been arrested has time and time again led to further people, particularly, and this is particularly in the sexual assault area, of people then feeling they can finally come forward to say, me too. In fact, funnily enough, when you look at that whole Me Too campaign that went on last year and earlier this year about show business, an enormous amount of that only happened because people were named. And then people who had known about this for years and years and years stood up and said, actually, he did that to me too. And that's what happens in, not just in the show business, in ordinary life too.
So you were
victims of headmasters, of victims of teachers, of scoutmasters.
Yeah, yeah.
They come forward, people who've suffered for years, and they hear this person's been arrested, and they say, actually, he did that to me too.
Good point. So you want the press to remain in the same position they are now. Fully understand that. You're listening to John Gaunt. It's Shooting from the Lip. My special guest today is the Wolfman, the man who knows more about Fleet Street than most people. Let me tell you, he was a tabloid editor. He knows how it works. Let's move on if we can. I mean, in the last day or so, we've seen Owen Jones come out and try and get Nigel Farage the sack at LBC, and there's a kind of feeling that if you are on the right, your free speech is being curtailed. Today we have Gary Lineker saying he wants a second referendum. That brings up questions about impartiality. Do you think there is an attack on anyone who's got a right of centre view at the moment, Neil?
I do, actually. I speak as someone who's right of centre. So maybe you should... Some would say, well, you would say that anyway. But there is no doubt. It's this whole it's an extension, this whole no platforming thing. Millions of people voted for Nigel Farage's party, UKIP, during in recent elections. Nigel Farage, yes, is right of centre. This stems out of Nigel Farage had a guest on his show one Sunday called Steve Bannon, who's a controversial character out of America, of the sort of alt-right, as they put it. And Bannon was, I listened to the programme, after it was claimed that he called for armed insurrection. He didn't say that.
No,
at
he
all.
Didn't, did he?
He used the word fight and battle.
And fight yes, for your country, but, which is what yeah. Trump said basically during the election. I don't even think Bannon is far right, to be honest. He is right. And Raheem Kassam, for example, who Owen Jones slagged off in this video. I mean, I think he was very much getting towards defamation or libel, some of the things he said. And I certainly don't think Farage is either a racist or far right. What do you think?
I absolutely don't. I don't agree with everything Farage says by a very long chalk. But the idea of calling him far right. And do you know what the worst thing about this is? It's an attempt to cut off democratic debate by saying if you're not politically correct, if you don't sort of heave to politically correct notions, then by definition your views are untenable. The only thing I cling to, John, and you, in the nicest possible way, are a working class bloke like I am. I'm from a single parent council estate family in Lincolnshire. And what you know, what I know, is that Owen Jones can sit up here, you know, sit in London as part of the trendy Metropolitan Police elite, just like Jeremy Corbyn. But, you know, out there in what used to be the coal fields and the Midlands and the North, they don't think Farage is a right winger.
Well, the recent polls would show that. I mean, 32% of people would say they would vote for a party that would deliver Brexit and that were right wing. 23%, I think it was, said they'd even vote for a far right party, which I wouldn't, where they want to send all Muslims out of the country. But there is something happening in the country at the moment outside of that Westminster bubble. And I don't think the establishment elite, or if shall we call it the swamp, like Donald Trump said, I don't think the UK swamp have got it. There's going to be terrible trouble, isn't there, if they don't give us the Brexit we voted for? What's your view?
Well, I'm absolutely certain that's right, because what it will say is yet again that the reason many, many people voted for Brexit, just like many people voted for Donald Trump, I really, in the main, don't like Donald Trump, an awful lot of what he's said and done. I think he's actually turning out to be a very effective president in some ways, deeply interesting. But a lot of people voted for him because they'd given up on the political class. The people who left middle-class kids, going to university, leaving university, going into politics. I mean, politics. And I mean, remember Neil Kinnock never had a job in his life. Well, the generation after Kinnock, like his own son, right, have never gone anywhere near the idea of turning out to earn your bread and butter, you know, whether it's in a shop, a factory, anywhere at all, which is the real world, where if you get it wrong, you get fired.
Well, look at the example last week when Theresa May, we had Andrea Leadsom basically saying, let's pack up in the Commons 5 days early. She was one of the leaders of the Brexit revolution. But she says, let's pack up early just to save Theresa May's neck. Now, can you imagine you were editing a newspaper or a deputy editor and you made a major cock up and you went to Rupert Murdoch and said, yeah, I've cocked up, but I tell you what, Rupert, we'll talk about it when I come back from the holiday. Well, you're not going till next week. Neil, no, I'm going today, Rupe. Is that all right? I mean, it just wouldn't happen, would it?
No, ridiculous. A colleague of mine, on an editor of another newspaper, cocked up, shall we say, and he was on the next plane to New York, you know, and stood in front of Rupert Murdoch, and that's a scary thing, let me tell you.
Okay.
That is a scary thing.
Let's go and talk about Gary Lineker in a bit more detail. I want to get on to Jeremy Corbyn, the present Labour leader as well, in a few moments. We're also going to talk about Sarah Champion and the rape gangs, well, they're all across the country, not just in Rotherham. And I want to get your views on this acid attack in Worcester. You're listening to The John Gaunt Show. It's Sputnik. It's Shooting from the Lip. My special guest today is Neil Wallace, the Wolfman of Fleet Street. Back in a minute.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
Welcome back to Shooting from the Lip with my special guest today on Sputnik International, Neil Wallace. Neil, let's just go back to Lineker, then I want to move on to Jeremy Corbyn. I feel that Lineker is part of that Metropolitan elite. Yes, he came from Leicester. Yes, he was a footballer. He's a very intelligent, articulate man. But if he got his way and there was some form of a second referendum, that would just add more and more to the mistrust and the disconnection. I mean, look at me. I'm steeped in politics and in news. But at the moment, I would not vote for any of them. And when I say that on my shows or I write it in my columns, many, many people agree with me. But that's bad for democracy, Neil. What about Lineker?
That's terrible for democracy. Do we really have to talk about Gary Lineker? I mean, I just wonder. I think he's terrific as a sports presenter. And
is he worth 1.7 million?
I think people are worth whatever they're worth. And I mean, where Lineker's concerned, do I think he could get 1.7 million elsewhere? I tend to doubt it. Would Sky, who are the best football presenters in this country, would Sky pay him 1.7 million? I don't know. But I think if that, it's just like that nonsense about why are footballers paid for just kicking around a bag of air? Well, they're paid because they're worth it, because people will pay that amount of money, and so it goes on.
I know it's a bit of an irrelevance, but do you actually think Lineker, though, when he's working for the BBC as a top presenter, the highest paid presenter, should he be expressing political opinions? I know he's entitled to his free speech. No, he shouldn't.
No,
tell me why.
Shouldn't.
Why?
No. Well, because he is, without question, he's using his public position that he's gained from being a sports presenter at the BBC to project a political standpoint. Now, if the BBC says that's all right, and that means that, you know, the presenter of the 9 o'clock news is allowed to do that, then fine. But, you know, you've got to accept Lineker has influence in this country because of his BBC show.
OK, that's his influence. What about Jeremy Corbyn and what is happening? He cannot. I mean, at the moment, he should be thrashing the Conservatives in the polls. He's not. If people are deserting the Tories, they're going to go to UKIP. They're now on 8%. There's rumours it could be 10%, which is a real position if they got there in terms of not getting into power, but influencing the Tories again, as they did with Cameron. Why is he not leading some kind of revolution? And how much is the anti-Semitism row really, really affecting him? I mean, I'm disgusted by some of the things they're saying about Jewish people. What do you think?
You know what? I honestly think that as shocked and appalled as I am by the anti-Semitism row, and I tweet about it all the time, as disgusting as it is, as truly, truly shocking that people like Corbyn can help promote or enable anti-Semitism and its growth and its spread in this current age, I don't think that's the major element that is damaging him, that ought to be damaging. I think it's a very, if you're politically active, then yes, it's a real issue. But again, going out there, whether it's Huddersfield or Nuneaton or Kidderminster or Manchester, I'm not sure that that's a major issue. I think there's lots. What really interesting is that the Corbyn effect exploded in exactly the same way as it did for Trump. It was about alienation. It was about in the same way that Bernie Sanders was a real issue in America for when they were the Democratic nominations, because he seemed cleaner, purer, cutting through the mess. And that's what Corbyn was. I think there's a bit of people are a bit more used to him now. I think he has largely disappeared because he's got a real problem, because basically he's a Brexiteer.
Yes.
And so he's leading a party that is desperately anxious not to be, in many areas, actually at odds with many of its own voters. I mean, the Labour Party's got huge problems, and Corbyn has huge problems as its leader. And I think they're at the stage where they're hiding him away, because when he's out and about, when he's not talking to the fanatical converted, he absolutely falls flat. He comes through as this sort of faintly woolly, rather nice guy who was promising apples and oranges and cake tomorrow, and he'll give us absolutely everything that we ever want to ask for. But, he only appears when he wants to offer us more sweeties. He doesn't stand up and lead as you would think a Labour leader should do. Because your point is so well made. Why on earth are Labour not 20 points ahead of the Tories?
Well, that's true. And also, there may be a snap election. I mean, let's just go back to the Tories for a moment. She can't cling on, can she? And why didn't Boris do the Brutus and plunge the knife fully in? What's going on?
Boris didn't plunge the knife in because you go back to too many cases in the, like Heseltine. He was the guy who tried to do for Thatcher. Yeah. As the man wielding the knife, he was never allowed by the Tory machine, the Tory establishment, to take the crown. He was seen to. So Boris, I think, does want to be leader. Having said that, Boris is a brilliant, brilliant writer. He's a pretty poor speaker. His resignation speech, as it were, in the House of Lords was, frankly, one of the best political speeches I've heard in a very long time.
Do you believe she will cling on?
Yes, at the moment, yeah.
Okay.
Because I think they're frightened. They're frightened of it all falling apart.
Okay.
If she doesn't.
We've seen this morning Trump has pulled off a great deal with the EU. He's got them where he wants them. Yeah. So Trump can do it. He's always willing to walk away, the art of the deal, the rest of it.
Absolutely.
But we seem to be getting shafted by the EU. This deal isn't really a deal, is it, that she's got at the moment? How does she get out of that corner?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is trying to exhaust the rest of us.
Yeah.
You saw there was a story in the Mail this morning, I think it was, by basically we're having Project Fear Mark II, really, of, look, this is the best I can do. Everything else is catastrophe. We've now got stories suddenly appearing about stockpiling food. I think it's a more subtle version of Project Fear, because she wasn't prepared to do what Trump did. Trump looked the EU in the eye and the EU blinked. And so Trump, yet again, this terrible disaster of a president, has yet again pulled off an international coup.
I'm laughing, but it's so, so true. So what do you make of the rise of UKIP, as they say, up to 8%, could be 10%, this poll that said 32% of people would vote for a right-wing party? What's going on in politics?
How many people know the name of the leader of UKIP?
Fair point.
So if it reaches 8% without anybody knowing the
Precisely.
Name of the leader, just think what it could do if Farage, a Farage-type figure...
Well, let me tell you, it won't be a Farage-type figure. I spoke to Raheem Kassam last week on this very show, Shooting from the Lip, and he said Nigel will come back in March, and if that happens, they'll be well over 10%, because they're going to capture the mood of the nation, aren't they?
I think they will, and let's hope the Owen Joneses of this world continue to dismiss and denigrate and sort of laugh, if you like, at Farage, because the point being that those voters won't. They are crying out for a Nigel Farage. And, you know, that's how we ended up here in the first place,
yes.
by people like Owen Jones and people like Corbyn and so on and so forth, just dismissing anybody who voted UKIP as, you know, bald, red in tooth and claw, tattooed monsters from the bog. They're ordinary people with a perfectly legitimate point of view, but nobody's listening. Nobody listened in America and they got Trump. Nobody listened here and we got a referendum Brexit result. Nobody listened here and what's going to happen next, John? I'm worried about it.
Same thing in Italy as well, of course. Let's just talk
Italy,
now.
Germany, Hungary, Poland.
Whilst we're also
Which way is it going?
Well, it's going to the right, isn't it? But let's also talk now about the thing that we don't talk about enough, or the establishment hasn't wanted to talk about, which is the Pakistani rape gangs. Moves today by Sajid Javid to do research into it. I would say to him, rearrange these words, stable, horse, bolt, etc. However, I guess we've got to welcome that. But these stories about Sarah Champion, first of all, Corbyn, chucked her off the front bench because of the article she wrote, the column she wrote in The Sun, when she said, look, we've got a problem with Pakistani men raping white women, which was a statement of truth. Do you think they'll ever discuss this properly? Because I think this is playing into that narrative you were talking about earlier, where people are getting so fed up with them because they won't tell the truth. We have a terrorist atrocity where little girls die. We're told, don't look back in anger. Neil.
Well, there is, in certain parts of this country, too many places there are these rape gangs, and the evidence just won't go away, will it?
No.
That very often they are Pakistani men preying on young white girls, and that is a cultural thing, it's a criminal thing, it's a scandal that both police and local politicians have shied away from it because they're terrified of the R word. They're terrified of being called racist. And as a result of this, this was allowed to flourish. And, you know, Corbyn throwing her off the front bench, this disgusting move in Rotherham, where all this happened, to remove the woman who, once it came out, incidentally, she wasn't that great before it became a public scandal.
No, that's very true. Yeah.
You know, she was already elected while this was going on. But once she did stand up to be counted, what happened? They want it to go away because, do you know why? Because the Labour Party in particular, they get those votes, I'm afraid, so often in those areas, and they don't want to risk losing them. And that's what comes forth. The sheer cynicism of it is disgusting, and the sort of political fear that stops people addressing a truth about what is the difference between victim and attacker.
Sure.
It isn't just sex. It's about culture, and these things really do have to be investigated. And give him his due, Sajid Javid is now doing so.
I think so.
As you say, better late than never, but by golly, as you say, the horse and stable have parted company long ago.
We're going to have to wrap in a couple of moments. Before you go, I just want to talk to you about the Skripal story and that narrative there and the way people have played along with the DA notices or whatever. What do you make of this story? You know, 4 months on, you know, do you blame the Russian? I mean, it just seems to me to be incredible that they keep saying it's the Kremlin, it's Putin, but then they don't bring forward the evidence. What do you make of it as a newspaper man?
I think it's true. I think that I've experienced and know enough about how the security services work.
Yeah.
It isn't as simple as investigating a murder or a bank robbery. Much of the evidence, which, you know, in the same sort of way, there's the issue about these two so-called Beatles being sent back to America rather than here, where you simply can't produce the evidence because it doesn't fit in with the very strict laws in this country, or you don't want to because it can release too much about security service methods. I thought it was very interesting. Last week was it when the police said we have identified specific people now?
Hold on a minute, Neil. They pulled back from that, and Johnson was very quick. And this latest bit, you know, oh, it's in a perfume bottle. Well, hold on a minute, in a package. Before it was on the door. It just seems to me they were too quick to keep giving. I call it like Cluedo. You know, how long before Reverend Green with the lead pipe in the glass house? You know, it's all a bit too much, isn't it?
I don't think so. We diverge on this, John.
Yeah, well, there's no problem with that.
I think no, it's no problem for me either.
That's free speech. Go on.
Yeah, it's called press freedom, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we should welcome that. And I tell you what, we're going to have to wrap there, Neil. I've got to say a great big thank you, Joe. I could literally talk to you for another hour or so, but it is only a 30-minute show. Can I thank you for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen, and Neil Wallace. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The John Gaunt Show here on Sputnik. It's called Shooting From The Lip. Back next week with another guest that'll get you thinking, get you talking, and get you shouting at what they've got to say. Thanks very much for your support. This is John Gaunt. This is Shooting From The Lip.
Shooting From The Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting From The Lip.